The show's Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. On today's show, we're going to have a member of the Yonder Mountain String Band who are playing at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Saturday night. And I think that should be a lot of fun show with a lot of fun music. And in the first part of the show, I'll be talking with trumpet virtuoso Alan Vizzuti, who is appearing with the Millikan University Jazz Band tonight at 7:30 at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur. Alan Vizzuti, equally at home in a multitude of musical idioms, including especially jazz and classical, but he's also performed with the Tonight's Show Band, the Airmen of Note, Army Blues and Army Symphony Orchestra, Chuck Mangione, lots of other folks. He's toured the world, and he spends a lot of time with students at the high school, college level, and more. And I think that'll be a real treat for the students this evening. He's also author of the Alan Vizzuti Trumpet Method, which has certainly made its way around as well. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was a tune called Zigzag, featuring and composed by Alan Vizzuti, who is trumpet player extraordinaire, to say the least. And we heard some of his credentials a bit earlier. He's going to be featured on, tonight at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur with the Millikan University Jazz Band 1. Program starts at 7:30, and heard about this gig from Randy Raymond, who is the trumpet professor there. And Alan Vizzuti is on the phone with us right now.
Hello.
From his hometown of Montana. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to talk to you. Thanks.
And I think, you know, we actually talked about you once with a student, former youth orchestra student of mine, who was at Urbana High School here in Urbana, Illinois, and I think you had come to work with the band there, if I remember right.
Well, you know, in the course of events, I've tried to keep active in the music education side, not just in performing and writing, and believing heartily in the value of music in people's lives, whether they're making it a course of study or not. I've always kept my fingers in playing at schools. I play a lot of universities, even high schools, and even some junior highs throughout the year, when it's possible to schedule that.
And, of course, this is sort of an outreach thing. It's with Millikan University. And we're hearing your, now and then we'll hear your wife actually playing piano in the background. And you guys are in your hometown in Montana right now?
Oh, that's right. We're in Missoula, Montana, doing a benefit concert for scholarship money for the University of Montana. So, we try to do our share, but also we were in England last week, and I was in Fargo before that, and Kentucky a couple. You know, it's kind of a wild scene. I've spent a lot of time in the belly of the big silver bird flying around, but it's been really, really challenging, really nice, really fun. And the bottom line is getting to participate with a lot of other people in music and connecting with people all over the world through the art of music. It's really been a fantastic run.
And since you do perform with your wife, do you often get then to travel with her?
Well, we do, yes, quite often. When I perform with Lori, it's a classical setting, and then I also am able to perform with symphony orchestras, which may be classical or pops, and then lots of jazz-oriented things, big band, festivals, small group, occasionally with my own group. I have a new jazz recording that will be released May 1st. So that may lead to some more activity with my own group. It's all kind of just fluid and exciting.
Well, it seems that there's an increasing number of performers who do straddle the fence between particularly jazz and classical. And is that a strain? What are the challenges of that?
That's
for
a,
you?
You know, a frequent question. It is a challenge because you don't want to do either side halfway or sound like a jazz player playing classical or a classical player playing jazz. So that is a challenge for sure. A lot of it is mental and submersing yourself in a style and allowing yourself to be a flexible enough performer to let certain things go about the technique of the instrument or to control certain things about the technique of the instrument in the right settings. And most people end up kind of having a larger success on one side or the other and going that direction, which I would say in my life, if that had happened, I would probably do that. For instance, if I had a big selling something, like a recording that was one direction or the other, I might concentrate on that for sure. But I've had a career that's a lot of slices of a musical pie, and it's worked out for me to be someone who straddles the fence weekly. And it's a lot of fun, actually. The flip side of it is one side of the type of music style can really benefit the other if you allow it to happen. In other words, controlling the instrument well enough to play classical music can help you play great jazz if you don't play stiff or too unjazzy, to make up a word. Sorry about that.
Well, maybe you just hinted
my lousy vocabulary.
Well, maybe you just hinted at the answer to what was going to be my next question, which was to go back to your comment at the beginning of that that there, which is that you want to be careful not to sound like a classical player playing jazz or sound like a jazz player playing classical. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what that might sound like in either case?
Yeah, well, what I really mean, too, refers to a real intense, serious professional setting. I don't mean the music's always serious, it can be fun, but for students and people that are having fun and playing in clubs and things like that, you can sound however you want. I'm just so happy people are giving it a shot, because classical players can really benefit from improvisation, for instance. You get a real freedom on your instrument that you might otherwise not try. And jazz players who say, oh, I only want to swing, well, if they actually learn some of their scales and arpeggios and technical things well, they can control their instrument enough to get their ideas out. But the facet that will change, or the stylistic item that really needs to be correct, is the rhythm feel, which you cannot write down. You have to learn it through osmosis, experience, and listening. Jazz phrasing, whether it's Latin jazz or jazz, straight ahead, or even backbeat-oriented improvisation, has to have a certain groove and feel to it that you can't learn from a book and you can't learn from a music school, except in the sense that you get to play a lot of, you know, ensembles and concerts at a music school. That's all positive. But it's not an academic thing. It's experience and it's exposure. So on the classical side, you get into this no perfection thing that can be kind of paralyzing, which I'm far from that. But I play pretty accurately, but when I don't go on stage thinking I have to play perfectly. You know, it bugs me a little when I make stupid mistakes, but the essence of the concert and the essence of the communication when you play beautiful phrases and with a beautiful sound comes across to the audience in a major way, and you really feel it. So it's one of the things that's addictive about playing in public, really, that communication.
Well, you've played with, and actually we're going to hear a co-composition with a guy who I once heard, who most people probably think of as a jazz player of some kind, but I once heard with the Norfolk Symphony in Virginia. It was Doc Severinsen.
Yeah. Yes, Doc Severinsen is an old friend of mine. He came to Missoula, where I am now, Montana, as a guest artist when I was a kid, and we connected then. And the last time I spoke to him was yesterday.
Wow. Is he still playing actively or not?
He is. He's retired technically, but he plays pop shows with orchestras, and he plays small group jazz things and big band. He's 83, and he sounds unbelievable. He also works out and has a great diet and has a good regimen, so he's in great condition. He's funny, he's witty, he does great with an audience. He's a remarkable man who plays the trumpet in a very unique way. And no matter how your tastes run, whether you really love his playing or it's not your thing, he is an icon for trumpet players, and the fact that you can, with regimen and with some discipline, you can play great for a long, long time. So, yeah, he's an icon for us. And it's so fun to have I still get to play on stage with him now and then, too, so we have a lot of fun with that.
So when you heard him as a kid, was he kind of an example of the sort of trumpet player you wanted to be with this straddling the fence thing, just for lack of a better expression?
Well, yes, except for some things that I don't need to really go into detail concerning stylistic choice. I had a concept of sound and approach that's different than Bach in the way I wanted to approach the music and how I wanted to play it. But in terms of inspiration of not only stylistic things, but his power and his discipline in practicing, he was a big influence and a big role model. He took me under his wing, too. I mean, we spent time together later years, and the other guy who wrote on the piece that you're going to play soon called Reflections is Jeff Tysik, who was a colleague of mine at the Eastman School of Music and is a conductor of the Pops Orchestras now. We worked together with Doc also. I got us all together, and it's quite an amazing, for us, I mean, it's an exciting combination of things. So you got the trumpet influence and the writing influence and the experience and the jazz and the classical all available to be tapped. So, you know, it's just one of those things in our lives that's been important to us. But as far as the general audience is concerned, what they get is some interesting music that is kind of unique, that, you know, that involves all of our personalities separately and mixed together.
We're talking with Alan Vizzuti here on Live and Local. He's going to be at Millikan University, well, literally at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur tonight at 7:30, but he's performing with the Millikan University Jazz Band 1, led by Randy Raymond. And so let's hear a more straight-ahead jazz tune right now. This is called Down at Sunset Sound, is that right?
Right. This recording was recorded at the studio called Sunset Sound, which is pretty famous in Hollywood.
And who's on it with you? Chick Corea is one you mentioned.
Chick Corea's on there. Tom Breckline's on drums. Joe Farrell, who's passed away since, is a jazz icon on tenor. And a guy named Bunny Brunel on bass is a French bass player.
And is this Alan's own composition, Down at Sunset Sound?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was called Down at Sunset Sound, Alan Vizzuti trumpet with pianist Chick Corea and others, and it's Alan Vizzuti's own tune, heard here in Live and Local on FM 90.9. He's with us on the phone, and he's going to be with the Millikan University Jazz Band tonight at 7:30 at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur. You know, we were talking about sort of this dichotomy or combination of classical jazz. Did you get your start as, you know, more in the classical side or more on the jazz side?
Yeah, my dad taught me, and he was out of the classical vein. The most commercial he was he liked Harry James, for instance. And so my basic training is classically, yes. And when I moved east, 17 years old, to go to Eastman School of Music, they had a really strong jazz program, and I really loved it and jumped in with both feet. And so that was really where I got addicted and inspired to work hard at catching up and participating. And that school is a fantastic place for a mixture of experiences, too, because they have world-class orchestra and wind ensemble, et cetera, so, yeah, that's where it really kicked off. And then when I left Eastman School of Music, I had a choice of going with the Woody Herman Band as the first trumpet player or going to San Antonio to play first trumpet in the orchestra because I had auditioned.
Yeah, which way did you go?
Yeah, I chose Woody Herman's band, thinking, you know, hey, let's do some touring and see what that's all about. And I always had this desire to be in front of the group instead of in the back also, meaning soloist. So I thought Woody's band would be, even though I was in the back row, would be more of a launching point, and it turned out to be fairly true.
In your work with young people, like you're going to do with at Millikan and when you come to high schools and so on, do you suggest to young trumpet players that they get a solid classical grounding, or how do you go about that?
I try to do that without squashing their enthusiasm for their main interest. And to be quite honest with you, most of the players I come across these days are interested in being versatile. And they understand that when you're versatile, it doesn't detract from your main interest. And it offers more opportunities in a freelance sense to participate and maybe in a professional sense to work more. Many of those players will get drawn in one direction or the other as they have success. In other words, if they get into an orchestra, they'll go for that, of course. Or if they become a more commercial player in a big city and play all kinds of freelance things, they'll do that. So it really isn't that much of a problem. Once in a while, pretty often I come across people that are interested in only studying classically, and once in a while I come across people who are only studying jazz, their main interest. And I do encourage them to have control over the instrument, which requires some work. And it's the same for both sides. But I wouldn't take the same level of, I wouldn't try to instill the same level of classical competence in a really great world-class kid playing jazz, because it's really not necessary. It's just that general kind of control over the instrument gives you a lot more of a voice when you have these ideas.
Well, you've mentioned several times this concept of controlling the instrument, and I noticed that you have the Alan Vizzuti trumpet method, where I'm willing to bet that you talk about that.
Your homework. Yes, I have a trumpet method that's rather large, group of three volumes that has become a standard treatise for study around a lot of the world. It's been out a long time now. And it was kind of a labor of love that I did gradually and step at a time. And what it has done is taken the methods that we had earlier and kind of taken it into the next level. And not necessarily all harder or more difficult, but just more contemporary ideas and from a trumpet player who's worked through a lot of that stuff. And it's caught on. It's an important book, I think, for trumpet players now, with all due modesty. And, I've got a lot of smaller books out there, too, but this thing is bubbling along, and it's become pretty standard, actually.
Well, and just looking at your own discography, it kind of, and also with the various groups and recordings that you've participated in, it's a pretty good sample of just about everything one can do as a trumpet player. I mean, you've been on many motion picture soundtracks that people will actually have seen, Back to the Future, Star Trek, lots of television shows. I'm assuming you've probably done commercials.
Yeah, there were a lot of
featured.
Days.
So here's a real nitty-gritty question, Alan. Where do you make the most money?
At the top of any of these niches, you'd make the most money. For instance, the movie industry has dwindled down because of sampling and computers and all that stuff to the point where there's just this small A-team that does a lot of the best movie calls. And they do okay because there's a residual system in which you get a little bit more payment for movies that succeed around the world without getting too complicated. As a soloist, imagine that you could literally play your instrument, depending on how popular you are, basically, and how well known you are, from $0 up to many, many, many thousands for one evening. Some of the great soloists like Yo-Yo Ma and Itzhak Perlman and the great Long Long, the pianist, and Chick Corea, they are really expensive because they are such a magnet for audiences that they can draw audiences in and make their nut, so to speak, and make it worth it for promoting them and putting on concert series and things like that. So it's every gradient you can imagine. And I'm not rich or anything, you know. But on the other hand, I'm rich. I'm not talking about money. Rich. When I don't talk about money, I am very rich. But anyway, what I'm saying is, I'm really grateful that my whole life has actually been creating and playing music ever since college days, my whole survival life, my work life and all that. It's been such a good thing. That isn't to say every concert or every teaching opportunity like that is very always fun and always fulfilling, but most of them are. And I think what that boils down to is you get to communicate with people, new people, people of different cultures and ethnic groups and languages, and it's an unbelievable door that opens, a portal that opens into other people's lives and existence that music just it just connects right up. And basically, if you're pure with your music, meaning you go out there with the intention of playing beautiful music with a good energy and a good feel to it, you can't lose. Now, what you have to do on a trumpet and many other instruments, of course, is you have to practice the thing so you can actually play it to the level you were thinking you want to play it.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much for adding that bit.
That's the deal there. Yeah, that daily practice. I still practice every day. And when I miss, when I fly across the world sometimes and I'm completely shattered, fatigue-wise, I stick a mute in my trumpet in the middle of the night and I practice for a half hour or something because I know the next morning when I got rehearsal, I cannot mess up.
Or they might not hire you back.
Feeling anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're not feeling on your game, you know.
Practice never stops being necessary.
No, it never stops. Somebody wrote a book recently and says to be an expert at something, you have to have a minimum of 10,000 hours in on it. And you know what? I did some math, and I'm way over that.
Oh, so you're a super expert then.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you feel like you're a beginner.
Well, you probably have to always woodshed. So.
Yeah, you do. You do. And it's the physical part, too. It's not like weightlifting. You have to be powerful. Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of physical. It's finesse and control kind of physical. People don't know that about trumpet, that it's more finesse than it is power.
Well, and you referenced Doc Severinsen earlier when you said he's got a great diet regimen and workout regimen, and at 83 he's still going strong as a trumpet player as a result.
That's fantastic.
Well, for more information on Alan Vizzuti, you can go on his website, which is vizzuti.com, and that's spelled V-I-Z-Z-U-T-T-I. And you can go hear him tonight at 7:30 at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur. He'll be playing with the Millikan University Jazz Band 1, led by Randy Raymond. And I'm really glad you're able to join us on the show. And why don't you introduce this last piece we're going to go out on called Reflections.
Thank you. Come on to the concert. It's going to be fun, and the band is really good. This last piece is a piece called Reflections that was written by Doc Severinsen and Jeff Tysik, and it's a little lovely ballad that I think everyone will enjoy, and we'll just say goodbye on this mellow note. And thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. Much appreciated. Reflections by Doc Severinsen and Jeff Tysik with trumpet player Alan Vizzuti, who will be playing with the Millikan University Jazz Band tonight at 7:30 in Decatur. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our show is made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And we have support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Next on our show, we're going to be talking with a member of the Yonder Mountain String Band based in Colorado. They're coming to the Canopy Club in Urbana Sunday night for a 9 o'clock show, and I'll be talking with their mandolin player, who actually has some history, as does another of their players, in Urbana-Champaign at the University of Illinois. Stay tuned. My next guest on Live and Local is Jeff Austin. He is one of the members of the Yonder Mountain String Band, who are going to be playing at the Canopy Club in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus Sunday night, the doors open at 8. The show starts at 9 o'clock. And he's one of four members of the band. He's the mandolin player and one of the singers. And I just learned, Jeff, from yourself, just as we were chatting before, that you've actually got a connection here to Champaign-Urbana. So thanks for joining us on the show, and tell me about that.
That's where Dave Johnson, who plays banjo with the group, he was a student there. He graduated from University of Illinois, and that was where we met, it was around 95, 96, and he had a band called the Bluegrass Holes that I became a member of, so that was where our musical connection really started. You know, I lived over on Illinois Street the night that I met him. I was sitting out on the porch with a friend playing some music, and he came wandering down the street and heard us playing music and asked if he could come up and hang out, and he said, "Yeah, you know, I got a banjo. We should get together and play some music sometime." So we got together a couple days later, and that was, that's the beginning of how it's, that's kind of how it all kind of came together, you know. And
so just the two of you got together?
Playing house parties to pay the rent, you know, and stuff like that. So
it was initially just the two of you, and then the rest of the band got sort of augmented later on?
It initially was, like I said, we had the band in Urbana there, the Bluegrass Holes. We would play, you know, over at the Embassy and Mabel's and all over the place. And then Dave and I moved out to Colorado, where we met Adam and Ben.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, we moved out there just because we wanted to kind of, you know, really kickstart what we were doing. And you know, like Dave said, hell, we were in our early 20s, and let's go west, you know, let's go out to Colorado and hang out with all the freaks and play some music, you know. it was kind of a prime time of life to go and do that. You know?
Why Colorado, though?
The music, well, at that time, the music scene, well, it still is. I mean, it's a very vibrant music scene. There's lots of very open kind of ears out there, too. The listening audience, on any given week, somebody will go see a DJ one night. They'll go see a bluegrass band the next night. They'll go see a pop band 2 days later. You know, I mean, people really have an open mind to the kind of music that they're into. It's not like, I just go see electronica music and that's it. You know, the same guy who might go see an electronica show one night will go see a string band the next night, you know. So when I went out there, I helped an ex-girlfriend move out there in late 97 and went to a bluegrass festival and was up for 3 days playing music, you know, watched the festival and then hung out at the campground and played music all night until the sun came up and did the same thing. And I just thought, wow, this is, you know, a couple of young guys could come out here and start a band and kind of make some cool things happen if we stuck to it, you know. So that was kind of, that was really what we did.
Well, of course, the On Your Mountain String Band has made quite a point of, as you say in the beginning of your bio, play by your own set of rules, and yet you're still playing these this traditional lineup of what normally would be bluegrass instruments, but you kind of play bluegrass, I guess. I actually was just listening to part of an interview with some of your colleagues there, and one of them said, you know, I wonder if we should even be calling it bluegrass anymore. What's your take on all that?
I recently did an interview. I said the same thing. I'm like, you know, that puts a dangerous label on it, you know, because then you're going to really upset the purists, you know, that are really, they want the music to sound and be respected in one way, you know, and so I think we've kind of dropped the hang up that we are a bluegrass band, you know, that we're just a band, we just play music, you know, and like saying, oh, you know, Mumford and Sons has a banjo in their band, so they must be bluegrass. Well, no, they're not. You know, they're a band that makes music, you know, so.
Dave, who you've been talking about, is also quoted in your bio as saying we don't have a lot of nostalgia for the past, and yet you are playing these traditional instruments, so you've obviously got some element of nostalgia.
Why those instruments? There's definitely some element. I mean, it's not, there's no nostalgia for it, there's respect for it. I mean, we respect the people that have come before us and done the work and you know, absolutely, and you know, those people are our friends. You know, we're lucky to call, you know, Del McCurry and Sam Bush and guys like that amongst our good friends, you know, and I think what it is we just try to lose all the hang-ups that can come with, you know, trying to be a bluegrass band. You know, that I think that's what it is. I mean, you know, on any given night, we play bluegrass tunes like crazy while we're playing the shows, you know. So, but it's I don't know, man. We were hung up on that for a long time. You know, oh, we got to try to sound like this. We got to try to be like this. And as soon as we dropped that and just became ourselves, the audiences really responded to that. So, you know, we kind of went, well, they're responding to it, so let's keep it up, you know.
Sure. Well,
we're trying to pretend that, to be something we're not. Let's just be who we are. You know?
Well, and you're folks who have a rock background at some level, and I think you cited some punk rock influences somewhere along the line. What about your what are yours personally? I noticed you did a lot of singing and acting and so on, in at least in high school.
Yeah, that was what I thought I was going to end up doing, was like, you know, end up on Broadway or doing musicals or being on TV or something like that. That's, you know, that's something I still would love to do. It's something that's still kind of a passion in my heart, is that style of music, you know, and musicals and stage plays. I really, really loved doing acting. I really did. I must admit, I get to act every single night though when I'm on stage. You know, it's that's one thing that people got to remember. They're, you know, you buy a ticket for an event, it's on a stage. It's going to be a little bit of theatrics, you know, and so I kind of still get to do a little bit of that every night. But that was really my background, and I never, like I've said before, I've never grew up with bluegrass. I never heard that. I heard, I had, you know, a lot of, like, my mom played a lot of country music when I was young, like real country, Chris Christopherson and Willie and Waylon and all the guys, and you know, that style of music I definitely listened to and grew up around. But I never listened to bluegrass, so when I kind of came into bluegrass, it wasn't, the music has to be played this way and this way only. It was kind of an open book. It was like, well, hell, why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? You know. So.
But you picked up the mandolin. What, you were about 20 or so, something like that?
I was probably, yeah, 20. You know, I had one. I had one for a while, and I had one for a while, and I didn't really play it. It just kind of was around. You know, I was playing more guitar and singing a lot more. But I, when I met Dave, and he said, hey, I want you to come sing for this band that I've got. You know, we could really use a singer like you. He said, you know, I said, well, what should I play? You know, I shouldn't just stand there and sing. And he really said, he's like, what do you got? You know, so I played, I had a mandolin around the house, so I just brought that. I just kind of wanted to start soloing, and so I was just, you know, the guys I was around were, they were just awesome. They were, you know, Ethan James, who got his doctorate from U of I in microbiology. He's one of my best friends in the whole world. He was the guy who said to me the legendary phrase of, you know, if you're going to play anything, just play it loud and play it fast. You know, even if it's just one note, who cares? If you play with guts and conviction, you know, then who cares? You know, you don't have to be a maestro. Just play like you've got a pair and put it out there, you know, and people will respond to it. And he was right, you know. So I try to do that on a nightly basis.
Well, let's hear a sample of one of the tunes that you do to sort of let it out there. This is from your disc called The Show, which we also sampled the outset here. This is called Rain Still Falls, and it still sounds like it's got some pretty strong traditional elements in it.
Adam and Dave wrote that tune, and it's Ben and Adam singing it, but that one's one of the more kind of traditional arranged songs on the record. So.
Okay, Rain Still Falls, the Yonder Mountain String Band. They're going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana Sunday night, and this is Live and Local.
Stand, I cannot go. Don't the rain still fall?
That was a tune called Rain Still Falls with the Yonder Mountain String Band from their album called The Show. You can go out and hear their live show Sunday night at 9 o'clock at the Canopy Club in Urbana. And the doors open there at 8 o'clock. Jeff Austin is with me on the line. He's the mandolin player with the band. And what was the genesis for the title, The Show? Because in your live shows, you don't use a drummer normally, but I'm guessing this is supposed to represent a little bit more what might happen in a live show, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's written like we would write a set list, like the lineup of tunes. It's really kind of like a set list, and the title came from, there's a song that I wrote on the record called Fine Excuses, and the end of the chorus says, I can't wait to see the show when she goes. And we were looking for a title, and Ben actually said, that's pretty cool, you know, The Show. We could call it that, you know, from the chorus of that song. And we sat on it just for a little bit. And we're like, yeah, I think that's pretty good, you know. And then when we got that idea, how to list the tracks and how to line the record up really kind of fell into place, because we thought, okay, you know, the first track on the record is Out of the Blue, and we would open with that song, and the last track is Casualty, and yeah, we'd close with that tune, you know. And cause you got a faster song, and then a slower song, and then you got a tune of, you know, an instrumental tune, and it really, that was how we approached it. And Tom Rothrock, who produced the record, who's just, I can't say enough good things about Tom. He's just an amazing person and a great influence and a great friend and a great mentor. He said, yeah, you know, let's write it like a set list. Let's make it look like the show would. And it really did write itself, you know, so.
And I wanted to ask just quickly about the string band side of things. Normally that's an acoustic, usually those kind of groups are presented acoustically, and you do that pretty much in your live shows also, right?
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that you're amplified.
Yeah, we just like to mess with people's minds. You know, we're just messing with people's minds. We just like to push buttons, you know. We figured, when we first named the band, when we were first hunting around for a name, we knew we wanted to either be a quartet or a string band. We knew that it would be, it would be really fun to have one of those two kind of things at the end, you know. And when we came up with Yonder Mountain, we looked at it, and I immediately said, you know, when I found the title, I said, Yonder Mountain String Band. And it just had such a rhythm to it, and just kind of such a tempo to saying the words, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and it sounded musical, and we jumped on it, you know. Also, we had a gig that was about 9 days away at that point, and we still didn't have a band name. We were almost called the Kitchen Fire Quartet at one point. We were almost called, what the heck was another name we had? Boy, we had some bad, bad names, you know. We had some bad names that we were thinking, and we were, like, so frustrated, we kind of said, well, maybe this will work, you know, let's just go with that, so.
Yeah, well, it's a good name. Is there a place called Yonder Mountain, or are you talking about,
you know,
Yonder
we,
Mountain over there, or it's just a way?
We took the title from Dave Johnston had a big collection of Sing Out, that folk publication that was around, the Sing Out magazine, and they would in every Sing Out magazine they would have sheet music for songs. And Dave had a book that was the collection of the sheet music from the years of Sing Out, you know, big folk publication, Pete Seeger, Joan Baez kind of period of time. And we, in truth, we were so frustrated with trying to find a name. I'm a big fan of the Grateful Dead, and when the Grateful Dead were the Warlocks, they found out there was another band called the Warlocks, so they had to rename themselves. And Garcia grabbed an encyclopedia and just flipped through it. And he kind of stopped on a couple of pages, and he stopped on this one page, and it said Grateful Dead, you know, and it's a series of folk stories about Grateful Dead, you know, and so I kind of thought, well, hell, you know, if Garcia did that with an encyclopedia, why don't we do that with this old Sing Out publication? And actually, the first the first page we stopped on was a song called The Little Old Bastard. And I thought, that's not going to work. Little Old Bastard String Band, that's not going to work. That, I don't think people print that on a poster. I don't think we get a lot of festival gigs with that one. So then I flipped to another page, and it was a song called At the Foot of Yonder Mountain. And I looked at it, and I looked up at the guys, and I was kind of like, ooh, I think I got it. You know, and they're like, what is it? And I was like, oh, it's, you know, Yonder Mountain String Band. And that was it. We were like, done. That's the deal right there. So,
all right. Is Jeff Austin from the Yonder Mountain String Band, along with Dave Johnson on banjo, Ben Kaufman on bass, and then how do you say your guitarist's name?
Once again, we like to mess with people. Adam Agela.
So is that the truth?
Adam Agela, yeah. Okay. He's a demon, man. That guy can play one heck of a guitar, man. He just, every night he pulls a trick, and I laugh. I stand on stage laughing, going, oh, my gosh, I get to play music with this guy every day. That's so cool, you know.
And Jeff will be laying it out on his mandolin and also with his voice. And it's going to be Sunday night, 9 o'clock, with doors opening at 8 o'clock at the Canopy Club on Goodwin Avenue in Urbana. And hope you can go out and hear them. And if you want more information on Yonder Mountain String Band, you can go to yondermountain.com. And for how to get tickets to the Canopy Club and see all their other shows, it's canopyclub.com. And let's go out. Well, we'll go out with the tune that ends your CD and that you said you sometimes end some of your sets with, which is called Casualty.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Sure do. Ben Kaufman wrote a good one there. I love playing that song live.
That's a lot of fun. Well, thanks, Jeff, for joining us on the show.
Awesome. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. It's nothing better than Central Illinois Radio, I'm telling you that much.
And you've been a part of it. It's Live and Local here on FM 90.9.
Good times don't seem to last, and the bad ones fade as fast. Either way, it means the time is flying. She gives me things for free. I wonder what it is you think you're getting from me.
The Yonder Mountain String Band on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Support for our show comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features a selection of 10 wines that are completely new to the store. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local, and here's a look at some of the events you can go see and hear live this weekend that we haven't mentioned so far, and concentrating on music just because of time. The Jeff Helgeson Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5 o'clock. Hathaways are at the Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign tonight at 10. The On Trio are heard in recital tonight at 7:30 in Charleston at the Dowden Fine Arts Center. And again with the Eastern Symphony Orchestra Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. The Illinois Wesleyan Civic Orchestra plays at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 7:30. The Mudblugs play blues and roots music at the Trading Post Saloon in Springfield tonight at 9. And the Frank Trumpeter Quintet plays jazz at Marley's Pub in Springfield tonight at 6 o'clock. It's night music. John the Revelator at the Fullinger Great Hall of the Krannert Center tomorrow night at 9 o'clock in Urbana. The Milliken Vocal Jazz Festival is all day tomorrow at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur from 9 to 5. It's A, My Name Will Always Be Alice, a musical presented by the Danville Light Opera tonight and tomorrow in the evening at 6:30 with matinee on Saturday and Sunday at 11:30. Francois Fowler plays classical guitar at Faith Evangelical Lutheran Church in Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The Milliken University Faculty Woodwind Quintet plays at the Cancer Care Center of Decatur Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And it's the musical, rather the play, Married Alive at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan all weekend long with various performances. And the Black Sacred Music Symposium continues at the University of Illinois with the University of Illinois Black Chorus. Check the School of Music website for all the times and locations. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYL FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.